As Chase Oliver embarks on his campaign as the Libertarian Party's presidential nominee over the next 5 months, he will face a series of questions and challenges. Here are some of the key areas where he might need to clarify, engage in discussion, and debate. The Libertarian Convention outcome, but specifically, whether Donald Trump has a clear path to the Libertarian voter and what Chase Oliver must do to win them back. I am William Del Pilar, and this is Fired Up. Everybody, this is William Del Pilar, and I am here with my guest, Tyler Collins. He is the chair of the San Diego Libertarian Party. Tyler, as always, welcome, welcome, welcome. And to the audience, before you answer, I am new at this, using new software, so you may see my head move here, 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 as I'm trying to do things. I'm a novice, but what's more important is the quality of the content we are going to talk about. Tyler, welcome aboard, brother. How you doing?
I am doing great. Thank you for having me, William.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Well, as we all know, Chase Oliver is the Libertarian Party nominee. Let's talk about the convention. Let's just get right into the convention. It was a wonderful convention to watch if you are a political junkie. Did you see, were you able, I know you didn't attend, but were you able to catch snippets of it online?
I was able to catch some snippets here and there, yeah. I did happen to be on vacation during that time, so I think my wife would have been a little upset if I was just on the beach watching, Libertarian convention stuff.
And for the audience, Tyler was at my one of my bucket list countries, Greece. I hope you don't mind me saying, but Greece is a beautiful place. Real quick, what... did you check out any of the ancient monuments or the tourist, ancient Greece that we study? And what are your thoughts about Greece? Was it your first time there?
Yeah, we did check out some of the cool old monuments. We went to the Acropolis in Athens, got to see the old historical sites. There was a really interesting museum, actually. They had just opened up a few years ago and contained like mock-ups of what the Acropolis used to look like at the height of old Athens. So that was really cool to see. But, and also a bunch of fun time on the beach and ATVs and, lots of, lamb pita things. So it was a good time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So. Now, I do know that Greece is notorious. This is a big negative, but I'm just saying this so people can watch out. There's a restaurant called Mykos or something like that, Mykos, and they don't give you the bill. And they push all this food on you. Next thing you know, you got a $700, $800 bill. This has happened multiple times. They are world renowned for screwing you over. And my understanding, but I don't know if it's true, that there's other restaurants like that. Did you run into any issues like that where you're like, what the hell? How much is this costing us?
Well, we did go to Mykonos, the island I think you're talking about.
Okay.
I don't think we went to that restaurant, although it was a family trip, so I wasn't the one paying. So, bring on the food.
There's Tyler. Somebody else's dime. I'm in. That is human nature. I always tell people politics is driven by human nature, which the media nor politicians nor anybody in that industry ever talks about. But, somebody's paying the tab. Let my human nature come to the front and bring it all on. Well, Tyler, let's get into this. We have a lot to talk about. To the audience, I'm a conservative. I have a libertarian on the podcast. Our company, Grumbly's Media, does both libertarian and conservative politics. I represent the conservative side. I asked Tyler on because Chase Oliver, shockingly won the presidential nomination for the Libertarian Party. Now, Trump wants the Libertarian Party vote pretty bad. I disagree with him, but in his mind, because I disagree with him because I believe there was voter fraud. I was born and raised in Panama. I've seen voter fraud. Telltale signs were easily seen in this election. But there is no denying Trump's belief that, had libertarians voted for him in better numbers, he would have won. Whether I believe it or not doesn't matter. He does. So that's what makes the libertarian vote so important for him. I can go on and talk about the current makeup of leadership, but Tyler's the expert here. Tyler, can you tell us a little bit about the Mises Caucus and their leadership style and their politics so the audience can understand a little bit? And the reason I want Tyler to explain this is because these are the specific voters I believe Trump is after.
Yeah, exactly. So Trump did appear at the convention, clearly with the goal of trying to get some voters. In his own mind, and this has been explained on, you know, news media in different instances, Trump definitely does blame, to a great extent, the libertarians for his loss in 2020. And he doesn't want the libertarian wing to lose in the election again. And the precise, you know, contingent of libertarians he wants to win over would be the Mises Caucus supporters, or the right libertarians, as you might call them. Just to kind of give the audience a quick recap of the different caucuses within the Libertarian Party. Like any political party, like the Democrats, like the Republicans, there are caucuses. Within the Libertarian Party, there are two main caucuses. So on the right-hand side of the spectrum would be the Mises Caucus. You could think of this as like the continuation of the Ron Paul Revolution to a certain extent.
Right.
On the other hand of the spectrum, I would describe, or could be described, as the left libertarians. The name of the caucus is the Classical Liberal Caucus. So there are many other caucuses, but these are certainly the two biggest ones. And if you had to talk about some sort of like factional infighting, it's between these two.
Okay, so we had that infighting. Most people, so for example, I apologize. I realize I don't have my speaker on and I need to get it on here so people can hear me a little bit better. Oh, well, I'll get it as I talk.
I'll do some monologue or something, you know.
I know. So you have the Mises Caucus is in. They're the ones calling the shots. They are the Ron Paul Revolution. They loathe one another, don't they? Chase Oliver wing and the Mises Caucus wing. Now, Chase Oliver has been a libertarian for since 2010. So, you know, I read an article. Has not been a libertarian for long. And I'm like, 2020, 14 years. To me, that's a good time to be a libertarian. And Chase Oliver, for the audience, is a magnificent campaigner when you compare him to every other libertarian I have seen. This year's batch of libertarians, Tyler, and again, I'm not here to knock you guys, but I am an outsider looking in. As my audience knows, Vermin, you know, Matt, the guy in the song, the guy at another presidential panel. Oh, yeah, it's okay if a five-year-old wants to do coke. You know, those that did not help the party. This was a class of candidates I thought were serious players. And the truth of the matter is, outside of a couple of them, I had nothing but – actually, that's not true. I had the utmost respect for every single candidate but one in terms of how they carry themselves, how they ran their campaigns, and how they would talk to people who weren't aligned with them, professionally, polite. To me, this was the best showing of the Libertarian Party. And look at us. We're libertarians where people go, hey, I can get along with that. Now, that includes people I don't agree with ideologically. So there's a difference in how you carry yourself, the respect, etc. However, when it came to actual campaigning, Chase blew them all away. Chase's big stick is that he forced a runoff in the Georgia senatorial senator's race. He did, but let me tell you the truth of how that works. When you have a close race in any state and it's over a 50%, Daffy Duck could be your party candidate, and statistically, he will garner an X amount of votes. So whoever the third party candidate was, they were going to force a runoff. And I don't say that to denigrate Chase. I say that because it bugs me, because what he says isn't necessarily true. But in his defense, Tyler, that's a formidable campaign point. I would have tailored it exactly as he did. So he's a great campaigner. He went to all 50 states. And Tyler can expound on this, and I'll give him the floor in a second. But my understanding is the primaries don't mean squat, nothing at all in the Libertarian Party race to be nominated for the presidential nomination. It's the convention and the delegates. And when I learned that and I realized Chase was going to every state, I was like, oh, my God, this guy's campaigning to hell. And even though I am 120 diametrically opposed to Chase, I respect the man because he ran what I thought was a brilliant campaign. Your thoughts on that before we get into the convention, the big surprise there.
Yeah, Chase certainly has run a great campaign. You talk about him visiting, you know, all 50 states or however many he visited. He made a visit to San Diego. There was an event. Any of our, you know, presidential candidates or nominees were welcome to come. It was Chase Oliver was the only one who actually did reach out. So I think he made the stops, LA County, Orange County, San Diego County. So he definitely has put in the work on the ground and run a very, you know, professional campaign.
Right. Okay. So Chase is the man in terms of professionalism, how he carries himself. We're not talking ideological beliefs here, just the politician and how they play the game. So when he came up as the actual serious candidate to the Mises caucus candidate, it was no surprise to me that happened. So to let the audience know, the convention was notable for the appearance of Donald Trump. You know, we don't really need to talk about that. I mean, do you have anything to say about that? My take is Donald Trump reached out. He gave a Donald Trump-esque-like speech, which is, I am the greatest. You know, I am the best libertarian. You know, vote for me. The only thing I thought was cute was when they heckled him. He's like, all right, stick with your 3% and keep losing, losers. You know, that's pretty bad. I thought that was a great comeback because they attacked him. But in your people's defense, Donald Trump showed no respect to the Libertarian Party itself by saying, I'm the best Libertarian, vote for me. So I thought Donald Trump should have taken a more temperamental tack, a more professional tack, and showed respect, and he didn't. But he didn't disrespect on purpose. That's how Donald Trump is. But he spoke to them. He was invited by leadership. Actually, I do want your thoughts, Tyler. I apologize. As a libertarian, how did you view not only Donald Trump, but to the audience, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. also came to the event. How did you view those two individuals coming to your event and actually seeing them there versus us talking about it off camera earlier?
Yeah, great question. So I remember we did an interview a while back about my thoughts on this prior to them coming. You know, I think a lot of what I said was indeed true. Back then I said, Trump is coming to make a stump speech, which is what he did. He was wanting to get the Libertarian votes. He did make some promises. He made some promises, you know, go with me and I'm going to free Ross. I'm going to enshrine protections for Bitcoin. I'm going to have a Libertarian on my cabinet. You know, if he gets elected and he follows through with all that, that's great. But who knows? And it's funny you mentioned, you know, he didn't respect he said he was the greatest Libertarian president and he got all these boos and, you know, horrible things.
Deservedly so.
But the minute he changed his tune and he started saying free Ross and actually addressing things that libertarians cared about, the audience completely changed and they said, okay, let's keep going with this. Okay, all right. Libertarian on the cabinet. Okay. So, you know, that was better. Now, in terms of RFK, I've seen RFK in person. You know, I've watched him speak. RFK is not a libertarian, and I don't think he should be or should have been the libertarian nominee because he's not a libertarian. That being said, in all the speeches that I've seen of him, I think he did a more sincere job of reaching out to libertarians and trying to come to some kind of more common ground. So I will say that about him. You know, if we were going to have someone on the stage, I'm glad that at least he seemed to put some more nuance and thought into his argument. So.
Right. You know, he's a lawyer, highly educated. He has a sordid past that would make every white supremacist college frat proud. And I'm kidding when I say that. That's just what everybody likes to knock him on. But he's very intelligent. Despite he has an issue with his throat. I forget what it is, but there's a medical issue. But he speaks very well. So that doesn't surprise me. What bothers me about RFK Jr., and please feel free to disagree, but as I see it, well, to the audience, my take is simple. I come from a third world country where I saw two dictators. So when I look at political parties, I look at leadership. I look at what they're supposed to represent. And so I look at it from the party's point of view, not my belief, because I think arrogance breeds when you start to throw your belief as that's how you should do it. I guess I am technically. But my belief is it's your party, Tyler. There should be no outsiders there. And I think that's kind of universal, but I get it because the Libertarian Party is in a unique place where they're powerful and strong enough to be noticed, but that's about it. And I don't mean that to denigrate as much as that's just the reality, but they do have some power this cycle because Trump does believe that he needs that vote and every vote. My take is simple. There's going to be voter fraud again. So yes, get the Libertarian vote because I say this jokingly to the wife, Tyler, honey, there may not be enough fake ballots out there to overcome this potential landslide. You know? So I say that in half jest, but my issue with RFK Jr. that I thought I saw from the get-go, Tyler, is that he was using the Libertarian Party for ballot access. And once he realized he could get enough access from enough states, he kind of like, you know, like a bad day, just kind of tossed you to the curb. Please tell me if I'm wrong in that or how you saw it.
That was my understanding as well. And I think going into this, I don't think we're under, you know, any illusion that everyone, I think, should have known RFK is a politician and he's doing this as a political move. I guess my positive feedback, I would say, was I thought the way he spoke to us came more towards he was speaking to us where we were at instead of simply saying, vote for me. So that was my compliment.
Yeah, Trump's on a tight schedule. He's got to throw his hell out of Dodge.
That's right. He's got trials to attend. So
yes, there you go, trials. Right. You know, trials that make every dictator orgasm and joy. Like, oh man, I got a template of how to take my people out of my dictatorship. Because that's what those trials pretty much amount to. But that said. You know, actually, this isn't I sent Tyler some notes and the points I wanted to talk about. And as you were talking, Tyler, I was reminded of a situation that happened. Again, I was born and raised in a third world country as an American citizen. My relatives go from white to black, gay to straight, poor that no American can imagine to well off. So the treatment of our fellow humans is extremely important to me, and my life changed the day one of my relatives angrily grabbed me to the side, jerked me into pretty much an alleyway, and told me, shut the bleep up. He goes, Noriega doesn't care about you. You're the protected American citizen. It's my son, my brothers. They're the ones who are going to disappear with the night, so just shut the bleep up. Because I was so anti-Noriega. So how people are treated is incredibly important to me. I am callous and mean and vicious on X because human nature, when you're not talking or looking at somebody, you tend to get cold and mean. That's just human nature. But the truth of the matter is nobody should be treated badly. And a delegate to the convention named Starchild, yes, my fellow conservatives, Starchild, and Big John interviewed him on the Big Question with Big John. So check it out if you're interested. He is not a Mises caucus guy, was what I surmised. And he put a sign up, and the sign was like no Trump or something like that. I can't remember. Maybe you remember. But the Mises leadership sent security, and they pretty much mugged the guy. He fell to the ground. And to the audience, I have enough gay friends, gay relatives. There are homosexuals who their whole identity is in their persona, Starchild and his. It's not good or bad, part of their culture. And to see him thrown to the ground, to see his wig thrown off, knocked out,
I was saddened. That crushed me because I don't care if he's gay. I don't care what my beliefs are about this or that. You don't do that to a human being, especially someone who has every right to be there, who has done everything according to the protocols and rules and has the freedom of expression to be able to put a sign up, Trump go home or we don't want Trump. Because, and he's earned that right. So to see that, you know, and I made sure Big John, my libertarian partner, knew, see, John, no, every party is the same with leadership. They become authoritarian in what they want and what they desire to have in their outcome. And that was part of the outcome. And I'm not knocking the Mises Caucus. That's, I am knocking them, but I'm not blaming them solely. That's human nature. Mitt Romney did that to Ron Paul, to keep it on the libertarian front, in 2012. Ron Paul had secured the right to speak at the Republican National Convention, and Mitt Romney and company changed the freaking rules to exclude him. Now, I don't like Ron Paul. Me, you mentioned Ron Paul, and I talked to Ron Paul newsletter right away. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. But Ron Paul had earned that right. So when I see rights suppressed, when I see rights taken away, when I see power abused, that really bothers me. And Tyler, that disgusted me from leadership. And I'm not picking on the libertarian leadership because I've seen that in every freaking leadership of every political party. What are your thoughts on that, on what happened?
Yeah, we actually just talked about this at our executive committee meeting of the San Diego Libertarian Party, which occurred yesterday. We're all kind of sharing our thoughts and trying to better understand the situation. Me personally, I wasn't at the convention, so I wasn't able to witness this. All I have seen are the clips, and it's a very brief clip. You can see right, he's holding up a sign, and then he's kind of taken down by security. We don't get to see what he was doing beforehand. Was he being some sort of aggressive disturbance? I don't know. So I don't necessarily want to accuse the convention management of something when I don't know all the details. But let's take the hypothetical case. Hypothetically, if all Starchild was doing is holding up a sign.
Just one comment, Tyler. I believe had he done something to provoke it, we would have seen a video. They were videoing that. The leadership would have made sure that video was out there somewhere. So, well, see, this is why we had to do this. None of that was there. And they also tried to take away his delegate status. That, I don't know the outcome or why they did that. I'm not in libertarian politics, but I can't tell you how to think. But in my mind, he did nothing to warrant that. And I just want the audience to know that, statistically speaking, had he done something with today's video, we would have seen something. I apologize for interrupting. Keep going, sir.
Yeah, I agree. If all he had done was held up a sign, and perhaps that is the case, it's very possible that that's the case, that all he had done was held up a sign, he should not have been treated in that way. He should have been allowed to be there just as any other delegate, regardless of his sexual orientation or his choice of opinion. If he was pro-Trump, anti-Trump. So yeah, I agree that, you know, if that set of circumstances happened like that, where all he did was hold up a sign, then that was a completely unacceptable authoritarian move by the convention organizers.
Right, right. Okay, I don't want to dwell too much on that, but I just wanted to point that out. You know, we can never, as mean as we get on social media, I'll give people a mulligan because you're hot, you're behind the computer. It's easier to be a bleep hole. And everybody's like that. That's why the smart people stay off. Again, so I'm not very smart. But let's move on. To lay it out, we talked about the Mises Caucus leadership. They have controlled the party since 2022. They got tired of losing. That's what the bottom line is. And they just took over the party. They are literally... Some people would accuse them of being a subdivision of the Republican Party. Right or wrong, that's how they're perceived. However, they are totally against the Chase Oliver wing. I'm just going to call it the Chase Oliver wing. And so that was the issue going in. It was a badly run convention. And I'm saying that Spike Cohen said it on Free For All earlier tonight with Big John. That will be put out tomorrow for you libertarians. But he also said it was pretty much a terrible run campaign because they didn't prioritize for the most important thing in they put the caucus leadership, I'm sorry, the party leadership, meaning who's going to run the party ahead of the presidential nomination. People have jobs to go back to. They have plane tickets. They cannot change the time. And it was obvious Mercado did not have control of the schedule. That's not good or bad. She's a novice. There was nobody with experience, obviously, helping her, or if there was experience there, they chose not to. So the Mises caucus was shedding delegates as the weekend dragged on. And why they put their – oh, I know why they put the party chair vote before the presidential vote. The presidential vote at the end of the day means squat. But leadership means Mises controls the party for the next couple of years. That's why they did it. But what happened was it created issues with the presidential nomination vote. Tyler, correct me if I'm wrong, but there were 7 rounds. It is 50% plus 1 to determine a winner. There were like maybe 6 to 10 candidates. This is a bunch of candidates, and they kept whittling it down. The Mises caucus leadership, which is, what's his name again? Michael Rechtenwald, correct?
Michael Rechtenwald, yeah. He was the Mises choice, yes.
And why was he the Mises choice? Just real quick to give a little background, the conservatives, he was not the top choice. Their new Ron Paulus leader is?
Well, Dave Smith was the choice, obviously. But for one reason or another, Dave Smith decided not to run as a candidate in this cycle.
Right. He said it was because of family. He's got 2 young kids. For the people out there, Dave Smith is brilliant orator. I always tell John I want to debate him. As a conservative, I'm like, nobody brings up the conservative points in detail. But I saw him debate Chris Cuomo. I was like, whoa, let me read.
He's an excellent debater.
Yeah. So
I've seen him live in the show. He is so quick on his feet. It's incredible.
Exactly, and that's because of his knowledge. When I helped commercialize the fantasy sports industry, I lived and breathed that every day. I was one of the best people you would find on the radio. I was one of the top players in the industry. It's because you just live and breathe that knowledge. And I say that because nobody could taught me. I was one of the best. That's Dave Smith when it comes to politics. He just has his retention. I admire that. I completely disagree with some of his takes. But he's a comedian who has taken this party by storm since about 2022 and chose out to run. Michael Rechtenwald is actually the exact opposite from what I've seen. I met him in California at the San Diego Libertarian Party Convention. He's an academic. The problem with academics is they're terrible at debate because they're never debated as professors. But he's a little different. But he's – and forgive me, I'm not attacking anybody here, but he comes across as a pompous ass. At times, he's arrogant. He thinks he's smarter than everybody in the room, and he may be. But just because you're smarter than everybody in the room does not mean you can win the debate. And that's his problem. And then he made all of the Mises caucus look like morons, idiots, fools to the outside world when he took what he claims is a 100-milligram gummy bear and was just effed up for the rest of the night. And then they send them out there to speak. And it did not go well with the audience. It went terribly with the audience. And I would suspect he may have lost a few delegate votes. What do you think? Or do you think he had all those delegates that were Mises in hand, regardless of what he did? And please expound on what I said, if I said it incorrectly or if my description is bad, because I'm not saying I'm the expert.
Well, at the end of the day, he lost. Whether that was because because they shed delegates over the weekend, or because of the gummy bear incident, or because he is, you know, not as good an orator as Dave Smith, I don't know. Maybe it's all of those things. But he didn't get it. And it went on to Chase, right? We continued 7 rounds of voting. At the 7th round, I think it was like some large percentage for NOTA. In other words, none of the above. In theory, there could have been no nominee if
right.
NOTA had gotten.
Whoa. Yeah, that's. See, this is where I look at Mises' leadership. Who the bleep are you? Are you guys that stupid? If you have a NOTA, that's going to screw up all the work you've done to gain ballot access. What more? And you know, good and well, leadership was hoping NOTA would win. And what NOTA is not on the – none of the
above.
Right. And Chase got 60% of the vote, which means Noda got about 40%. It was disgraceful look for the Libertarian Party to the outside world. I want to go back one round. I want to go back right before the sixth round. This is my personal belief. Chase is a supporter of Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter had the comment, pigs, honestly. They're okay with killing cops. Black Lives Matter. So I see anybody who supports Black Lives Matter, you're supporting killing cops. That's just my bottom line take. I'm not saying I'm right. That's just how I look at it. He's a supporter of that. What came out of nowhere, and I told John, look, I've been political junkie all my whole life. I've been involved in politics since 2015. I did not see this coming. And that is, do you want some story of what happened? How Chase aligned himself with a cop to showcase one of the great political shocks in modern history. And I do mean that in terms of party politics. Tyler, would you care to explain what happened there? Because the individual I'm talking about was also being wooed and had made certain promises to the Mises caucus. Do you want to explain how all that went down?
Yes. So in one of the last rounds, essentially, Chase Oliver extended a hand to Mike Chermat. So Mike Chermat was another one of the candidates. And basically Chase's team said, hey, Mike, you take your delegates and have them vote for me. And you'll be my vice presidential nominee. So that was the shenanigans. Do you want to say anything about that or?
Well, it was shocking to me because Chermat is a cop. And as I told you, Chase Oliver has always denigrated cops. He's always denigrated them. And I do mean denigrate. And that aligns with libertarian policy, too. They're not fans of cops. I always tell a libertarian, you don't like cops? Come with me to Panama and see how much you love cops because you go walking through me with cologne. Well, I would not take you into cologne. Cologne is pretty much the Harlem. That's where I'm from. That's my birth certificate. I'm a colonist. But the first thing I do is, where are the cops at? And those are the corrupt cops. You know, it's what I try to tell libertarians is, I don't care what you think about cops. Society wants them. You know, a society wants law and order. That's why immigrants come here for our law and order. But my point is this, is Termont's an ex-cop.
Yeah.
Chase has done nothing but badmouth cops. This is human nature again. This is not on Chase and Mike. This is on their susceptibility to human nature. One doesn't like cops. One chose to, after 2 years of campaigning, Mike Chermat saw his whole libertarian political campaign for this cycle was coming to an end.
Yeah.
And an olive branch was reached out to him by somebody who's okay with cops being defunded. And I'm not going to say what I truly believe, but not a fan of cops. Two, I don't know if there's an analogy for or a saying for it. Two completely different beings unite to overcome the individual from Michael Rechtenwald who had led in every ballot up until the sixth ballot. And that's when he offered the hand and Chermat took it. But what I found interesting, Tyler, was, and I thought this was very weak on Chermat's part, when he was up there on the floor, Mises Caucus, I've tried for 2 years, I've tried. I mean, just suck it up. I am accepting Chase Oliver's offer to be his VP. Don't be apologizing. Man up and accept it. All the background stuff, don't bring it to the front. And that was the shocker, people. It was oil and water uniting to defeat party leadership's actual candidate.
There's and that famous party quote, politics makes strange bedfellows.
There you go. That's maybe what I was thinking. Exactly. And to make it worse, this is why I alluded to it earlier, the Mises Caucus leadership, because of how they mishandled the convention with the scheduling going overtime, literally every event, how they were shedding delegates. And I don't know the count. Nobody said it, but even Spike Cohen today said that likely cost them Michael Rechtenwald the nomination. Now, the reason this is so contentious is because the Mises Caucus looks at Chase as pretty much a Democrat who is too woke, and they criticize his stance on immigration. But I also believe it shows that, as I told Big John, my partner, you think the Mises Caucus actually owns the Libertarian Party. I go, no, I've been telling you forever, they don't. And this proves me right. Because inside political party battles, it's always contentious. It's always tribalistic by nature because you're battling for your ideology. There is no middle ground when you're battling within your party for ideology. What's your take on what I just said in terms of maybe leadership not planning properly, as well as what I've said about, you kind of alluded to it, but your final take on this whole union to defeat him? What was your take as the party chair and as just a political junkie watching it?
Yeah, I thought that was, well, one of our slogans is we are the party of principle. And I think this does show that, like you said, it's human nature. Regardless of whether it's the Democrat Party, the Republican Party, the Green Party, the Libertarian Party, there are dynamics to a political structure and incentives. And in this case, Mike Chermat found himself in a situation where he could be consigned to irrelevance, potentially, if he hadn't done something in order for himself to advance. Or if I was going to take the generous approach and say, maybe this was Mike Chermat's chance to carry his message somewhere and carry his supporters to more, to get their message out and make things happen that they want. Let's take the charitable interpretation. In any case, the opportunity arose and they met to do that. Politics makes strange bedfellows. So I think we're seeing this happen. I mean, we saw it happen this year in the Libertarian Party, so that was really interesting.
Well, it's a conservative show, so I'm going to give my take. Tyler's right. That's one way to look at it. I view it, again, as human nature. Every party you see this happening. Reagan was forced to accept Bush, which to me was our death knell as a party, because as soon as Reagan left office, the rhinos took the party over. So strange bedfellows are always made. I view it as human nature. When you're that close to the power, it doesn't matter if it's becoming the president of the HOA, the president of your lemonade stand, it's office politics. And I saw Chase and Mike Chermat, who I like. I like Mike a lot. Actually, I've met him a couple of times they threw their beliefs aside for power. But I'm not saying they're bad people. That's human nature. That's why it's important you understand your politician, where he stands, and you actually vote for the values versus what they tell you. So, and I don't knock them for it. To me, that's politics, baby. Big John and I were watching it right where I'm sitting. I'm watching it live, and I'm like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. It was said because you saw it coming, but you didn't really believe it. Anyway, we're dwelling on this a bit, but that's because I'm a political junkie. And to me, that was just like stunning. That was like must-see TV if it was televised on television. So congratulations to Chase. God bless Chase, even though I don't disagree. I agree with him zero. And God bless Mike Chermat. He actually seems to be a human being who wants to help. And for those libertarians out there who aren't involved in party politics and you don't agree with him being a cop, it was him being a cop that opened his eyes to why certain police precincts.
And he became a cop late in life, from what I understand. He had a very colorful, professional life. He's done a bunch of different things.
Right, right. And being a cop showed him we have to change how cops are trained, how they respond, things of that nature. So that's what he took to it. So Chase wins it. And, I sent Tyler a list of the overall issues, whether it's policy clarification, foreign policy, economic policy, electoral strategy. But right now, Chase, leaving this conversation, I think one of the big issues – Tyler. One of the biggest issues for Chase – is party unity. The Libertarian Party's internal divisions, and they're highlighted with the tweets and articles out there. That's a significant challenge to Chase. Chase thought he was being a man, manning up, whatever you want to say, being tough guy, by leaving all of his previous posts and tweets up. Now, when your plane stakes this high, you clean yourself up, period. It's low-hanging fruit. You clean it up, right or wrong. That's just what you do, so you don't have to deal with the crap, and then you can create your own narrative. It's no different than running a business. You have your business strategy and your tactics. He left all that up. And that's why I said it's highlighted in his tweets and articles. His ability to unify the party and appeal to the traditional base and more right-leaning factions, specifically the Mises Caucus, I think is detrimental to him gaining at least 1% of the vote, which people are going to laugh at. But for the Libertarian Party, that's your normal standard. Gary Johnson got 3%. In 2016, and that was a lot of new
libertarians. It wasn't 2020 because Joe Jorgensen was 2020.
Oh, that's right. That's just 2016. So, and a lot of libertarians say their calling came because of Gary Johnson. I don't know if Chase can hit 1%. What are some of your things you would, if you were in Chase Oliver's kitchen cabinet or one of his consultants, how would you get him to unify the party or attempts to unify that party?
Well, you mentioned an interesting thing. Is Chase going to hit 1%? I think it actually depends on the state. It's going to say red state or blue state. You know, in fact, you might want to think about this. If you are a Republican, you want to throw as much money at you as you can at Chase Oliver's campaign. Because for every one Trump vote he takes away, he takes two Biden votes. So
right.
You want to throw money at his campaign in blue states, and you want him to do well. You want him to get more than 1%. If you're a Republican, that's what you want. Now, in terms of – go ahead.
No. Go. You go.
Yeah. So in terms of party unity, you know, I think his campaign is trying, and they're formulating a plan. I do feel like this is going to be an uphill battle, especially because he's already faced so much resistance from, let's say, the top people from, you know, the opposition within the party. They've just dug up all this dirt, you know, all these tweets in his social media's past and all these pictures. And they've really created this narrative about him, you know, whether or not it's true or not, it's irrelevant. But the Mises Caucus, or certain people in the Mises Caucus, have created this narrative that that Chase Oliver is this pedophile groomer who just wants open borders and is like an Antifa Black Lives Matter supporter. Correct. This is what they've, you know, all their followers are seeing this now. So Chase is going to have to try and say, create some sort of messaging or something to convince half of the Libertarian Party. Oh, wait a minute. You know, the water's not so bad. You know, I'm not such a bad guy. We'll see if he can do that.
Well, what would you suggest him to do to try to mend that that fence?
Yeah, so this is one of the things. So actually, I was in touch with Chase Oliver's campaign because I was saying I'm going to be going on a conservative podcast. I'm going to be getting questions from the conservative perspective. You know, what might be the Chase Oliver campaign's response to some of these things? So, for example, I'll give you an example of one thing. Let's see.
So in in terms of what Tyler is talking about, this is one example. And I'm not trying to belittle, but this is how harsh the Mises Caucus, in terms of the individuals you were talking to, has been the Chase. Fair or not. In terms of, what they're trying to say is, look, he's a groomer. He supports this. He supports that. You know, do you think this is I personally think it's unfair. The Mises leadership needs to be supporting their candidate. But this is what they're putting out. What are your thoughts on that?
So I'm going to read an official statement I received from the Chase Oliver campaign. This is how he's responding to it, and then maybe I'll give my thoughts on that response. The official line is this, quote, Chase's position aligns with the LP platform, parental rights and medical freedom. Parents and doctors are expected to act in the best interest of the child and can be held legally responsible if they don't. Politicians and bureaucrats are typically unconcerned with the individual and are not held responsible, end quote. So that's his response. it's one thing to read a wall of text, but if you are someone who is, let's say, a hard, you know, a right-wing libertarian, and you're uncomfortable with, like, some of the LGBTQ fringe ideas and fringe things that are happening, you can see what Chase wrote, but then if you see that picture, you're going to get this gut reaction and say it's, you know, some sort of trepidation. I don't know if, you know, he can write all the words he wants, but I'm not sure. I think he needs to find himself someone to, he'll need to make some amends within the Mises caucus, if that's possible. I think he's got to win over some of these key stakeholders there. I don't know if it's possible, but I think that's really what he would need to do.
No, I agree. I agree. It's easy to cast, to paint him a certain way, but Chase is smart, and he chose not to address this before winning. And that was, if he made a mistake, that was a critical mistake. I am not uncomfortable. I just completely disagree with him 1,000%. So the reason I say that is, I'm like, that's him. That's who you're voting for. That guy. I'm not uncomfortable. I'm telling people, do you want that man to represent libertarianism? But that's me putting on my political hat. That's me trying to sway libertarians to vote for Trump. Personally, I don't care, but I don't want it pushed on kids. And that, I think, is the problem facing Chase.
I'll give a little bit of my personal opinion on this issue. So is it the role of the state to prevent child abuse? Or if a parent is abusing their child, should that be illegal? I would think yes. If you are abusing your child, that should be illegal, and perhaps the state should step in. Would someone define, like, medical transition, you know, for, let's say, a 10-year-old as a form of child abuse, potentially? And so if we potentially categorize transing a 10-year-old as child abuse, then I think it's perhaps the role of the state to say, no, this can't happen.
Yeah, you know, this is big John brought up, and I put up when I saw this image, I told John, now that's a manly looking Chase. That's the one he needs to have circulating out there, you know. And I was being serious, you know. So here's my props to Chase. you know, I completely forgot my thought. I got so engrossed there with Chase, but I think at the end of the day, Chase made a critical mistake here. He really has no way to woo any right leaning, because we are set in our way of how we view this. And I think Chase may still be stuck in 2010 when he was a Democrat. And the reason I say that is the Democrats have taken a complete one. The Democrats are now saying that, if you elect Donald Trump, he's going to put me in an internment camp. Rachel Maddow, a few other MSNBC, because they just lost the debate on children, the pride parades, the queer story hour, or whatever they call it. And Chase has supported all that. So to me, it doesn't matter what he says about that. He's lost that battle. You know, and here's where I think he may have lost it from a libertarian standpoint, because it goes against his beliefs. What you were saying, what's the state's, I remembered my point. What's the state's role? Well, Chase believes it's a parent's right if they want to transition their kid. It's a parent's right, whatever they want to do, because they speak for the kid. Okay. I don't believe you always believe that, Chase, because I'm pretty sure you did not probably agree that it was a parent's right with their child under 18 who has come out, for the parent to send them to a detransition, a gay detransition center. You know, I mean, I don't believe those work anyway. I think all they do is increase suicides. But I just find it ironic, for convenience, he'll say this. But when you look at it from the bigger picture, even that is flawed, because if you're okay with a parent deciding to detransition a child because the child says, I feel like a girl or a boy, and they're the opposite, then you should be okay with the detransition centers to remove homosexuality from that kid. See, those two things don't jive. So that alone is a type of example, I believe, that kind of destroys where he stands on. Also, the belief of libertarianism, and I'm not negating or denigrating these. It's you know, his belief system. Well, that's a parent's I'm sorry. It's the business. Well, that's a private business. You know, let's shift to the vax. A lot of people have come out, Tyler.
Yeah. This was another thing that the Mises people were unhappy about with Chase. Yeah.
Go ahead. Explain that then. The COVID.
Yeah. So I think the gist of it is that they thought Chase was a bit weak on the COVID stuff. So in essence, in my understanding of what Chase had said at the time was, vaccine requirements are all fine as long as it's done by private companies. I suppose the criticism there was, well, there's a lot of interaction between the state and these companies, and so are these decisions that are being made really, truly private company decisions?
Tyler, you're putting it in a hypothetical, and you're correct. But where did you stand on that in terms of what Tyler is saying is my side, conservatives and Mises caucus, we look between the lines on this one. I rarely like to do that, but this was pretty easy. Hospitals were given financial incentives. Businesses were given various types of breaks or Big Pharma itself. They said, hey, we'll send this out, but you can't sue us. They were in bed, you know, Target, Walmart, they were all in bed. The military, they were all in bed and tied into advantages. So, for example, Target and Walmart were able to stay open. Mom and pop shops, part of that deal that's unwritten, you got to push the vaccine. They mandated it. So when Chase says, hey, they're private businesses, my take is I'm not stupid, Chase. I can read it between the lines. It's not a private company making this decision on their own. Also, companies were pressured by the government. Mark Zuckerberg came out and said that the FBI pressured us in terms of all of this type of stuff. So because of that, I think that's another failure in him not being able to look ahead in determining how he would counter that. My point being, Tyler, and please disagree with me if you think I'm wrong. My point is when he goes to any right-leaning libertarian and says, well, they're a private business, they're going to respond like I have, because I think, Tyler, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if you're a libertarian, doesn't matter if you're a conservative, doesn't matter if you're a liberal, an old blue dog liberal, don't mess with my kids, because I throw ideology to the wayside when it comes to my kids. And I believe that's how they're viewing him. Am I right or wrong? What are your thoughts, and am I looking at it the right or wrong way?
So first of all, I want to answer one of your earlier questions was, what are my views? And I'll explain the general views of the people in the San Diego Libertarian Party. We stand firmly against lockdowns, mask mandates. We actually supported for the San Diego Board of Supervisors race. There was a special election. We supported, this was a nonpartisan race. We supported Amy Reichert. She was famous during, 2020 for being super anti-lockdown. So, I don't think we most definitely, more on that Mises side of the COVID stuff. So, that's the first thing. Second of all, so let's continue. What was your other question?
Well, am I looking at it properly? And while you're talking, I'm going to post some of the pictures as to why I believe Chase has kind of lost the social issues. My take was, I can read between the lines, Chase. There were more businesses than not of power that were in bed with the government or strongly forced by the government to follow a certain line. And because of that, I don't buy you telling me they're a private company. I don't care that technically they're private, because in reality they were in bed. So you're not being honest with me. You're using that libertarian mantra to hide behind the fact you supported the vaccine mandates. That's how I'm seeing it. And I believe that's how right-leaning libertarians are seeing it. My question to you, am I right or wrong? But I didn't ask this part, but if you can answer this part, how does Chase overcome that? And or is it possible to even overcome that?
Well, this is pretty common with some of his responses. And this is what I received from the campaign. A lot of the responses fall back on theoretical sort of academic grounds, saying, well, in a perfect libertarian world, the company is a private entity and couldn't do whatever it wants. And Chase would say, well, I'm not in favor of mandates, you know, and he's relying on this kind of academic principle. And this is what I've seen from his responses from his campaign about what happens when you get the conservative question about this. Again, I think what he's going to have to do is he's going to have to maybe even do something like saying, you know, perhaps he might need to say, I really wasn't good enough on the lockdowns. In terms of being pro liberty, pro freedom, and he might need to own up for, you know, that. I think that could go a long way. There's a lot of discussion. I know. So for example, you take the COVID tyrants, right? Well, I think one of the things that made people really upset after the fact and to this day is that they never apologized, or it was so weak. They just said, well, it happened. We all made mistakes. No, you shut down businesses. You ruined people's lives. You need to own up to that.
The suicide rate was astronomically high between...
It was horrible, though. Drug abuse rates, suicide rates, rates of economic deprivation. It was awful.
The damage the lockdowns did was exponentially greater than the amount of deaths, which was overstated because people may have had COVID but didn't die of COVID.
Well, then Cuomo was killing them by putting them all, keeping them in nursing homes together when they were positive with all these safety, you know, precautions.
My mother-in-law, God bless her, rest in peace, she was part of that lockdown process that happened. In fact, when she passed away, she went quickly. Quicker than what they thought. They told my wife, we've not ever seen this, how quickly, how she just went boom. We thought she's okay. And then a few days later, she passed away. My wife couldn't see her. They literally, if it wasn't for some of the workers there, it was kind of like a mini revolt. You got to let her see her mother. So I even couldn't be there. Wasn't able to go there until after she had passed. In her heart, she believes COVID had a hand in killing her, and the lockdown specifically did her in. These were elderly people who were lonely. They had nobody. They, you know, and she died. In my wife's heart, she believes it was those. She blames the government, you know. So she would never even look at Chase. She would never even consider him. And I think that's part of the problem. Before we get to I want to revisit the transgender issues, not because I want to pick on Chase, but because I want to show the audience this is what he's going up against with various pictures, and get your thoughts on how he can counter that, if that's even possible. But right now, I want to move on in terms of the COVID issue with your last take. Can he overcome what we just described? Yes or no? Can he overcome and convince people that he supported COVID mandates that he did not? Whether true or not, can he overcome that?
I think the COVID stuff is overcomable if he puts in the work to make the amends.
See, that's the big thing. And Chase, to defend Chase for the last since Al Gore, George Bush era, politicians, since Bill Clinton era, actually, 92, politicians do not say, mi culpa, my fault, in terms, because in today's media environment, that's a death knell. I think, and that's why Chase won't do that. Now, going back to the changing course here, going back to close out the Termont Chase alliance with police reform, I think that's actually a strong point. I think Termont actually hurts him a little bit, but Termont has explained that very well, so it's minimal. But I think his stance on pro-police reform has always been a strength, regardless of the fact of what I think is a conservative. But as a libertarian principle, I think with a pro-police form, you know, he supports that. He wants to increase accountability. He wants to end qualified immunity. I think he's 1,000% wrong. If you want to end qualified immunity, you end it with the DAs, not the cops, because the DAs are the ones who actually do the prosecution. You know, and he wants to end cash, and he supports, he wants to end cash bail, which I think it's totally wrong as a conservative. Look at New York City. Look at L.A. How many people are in revolving doors with no cash bail and they actually murder people? It may not be statistically high, but it's enough to go, that's not good policy. But from a libertarian perspective, I think he that's a strength of his. What's your take?
Yeah, I think generally speaking, libertarians are, you know, on board with being pro-police reform. In particular, I think you would find pretty much unanimous support for police demilitarization. In other words, you know, why do we need all of these, you know, municipal police departments in some tiny town to have armored personnel carriers? Why do they all need to be equipped with automatic rifles when it's just, you know, a bunch of people in a town going about their business? In particular, we've seen so much swatting in recent years and these no-knock raids, just unnecessary killing of our, you know, neighbors and family members by police. So with that broad stroke, I think you would get broad agreement from libertarians.
Right, right.
Now, where do they disagree? They would disagree. We see Chase's support of Black Lives Matter. Now, there is, in theory, the differentiation of the movement and the organization. But I think a certain part of the Mises, you know, caucus would be uncomfortable that we haven't, or at least I haven't seen much from Chase saying, okay, he supports these police reforms, but do you also call out all the violence and destruction that had occurred during the Summer of Love? I don't see Chase really commenting much about, you know, the rioting that happened and the destruction of property and the threatening of people's lives. I would definitely see the right, you know, Mises caucus saying, okay, Chase, sure, let's, you know, end police militarization. But are you defending all of this rioting that was going on? So that's a big point of contention, I think, for him, which he will have to try and overcome. Another point he'll have to try and overcome.
So something I want to talk about, it's not that interesting to most people, but I think it's an important, I assume it has some relevance with the Libertarian Party, because you're the third party, and ranked choice voting is a way to get third party members more easily elected. I despise ranked choice voting. So let's say we have Newsom, Schmuckatelli 1, Schmuckatelli 2 on the California ballot. With ranked choice voting, I have to list Newsom as my third candidate. No ifs, ands, or buts. So you are forced to vote for a candidate you hate. And I do hate Gavin Newsom. He is a vile creature who is funded by oil money, yet attached oil. You know, for people not aware, Getty Oil was the first billionaire in the world back in the 70s, if I remember correctly, or one of the very few. And that is who is the benefactor for Gavin Newsom. So I loathe ranked choice voting. It means you have to vote for people you don't want to. Your vote is also negated by the process. And this has become so convoluted that they can't even tell who the winner is in some states at the state or local level when ranked choice voting is used. What are your thoughts on it? And is that an important issue with the Libertarian Party? Because he advocates for that. Is that something that's pushed hard by the Libertarian Party?
First of all, I'll say that no voting system is perfect. it's just physically impossible for any particular voting system to satisfy all the things that we would think of as fair and just in terms of the voting process. That said, it's my personal opinion that ranked choice voting would do a great deal of good for allowing people to express their true variety of opinions. You could see a lot. So, for example, in other countries, they have a wide range of political parties. And due to different voting systems, you have proportional representation in their legislatures. So you'll see 10% of some small party, you know, let's say the communists have 5% or something. and some hardcore right-wing party has 5%. But so the populace is allowed to express their true opinions and have them actually proportionally represented, which I think is a good thing. And ranked choice voting would be one of the best things ever to happen to the Libertarian Party. That way we could get all the people who are saying, well, I really like the LP, but I want to pick one of the big two. They could say, all right, I want to put LP first and then Republicans, or LP first and then Democrats. So we get all of that, which I think would be the best thing. Now, is that a priority for the Libertarian Party? Yes, I think so. It's a front and center issue for all of the conventions that I've ever been at. There's always at least one speaker about ranked choice voting. It's, you know, I think there's like different initiatives about this. I think it's a very important part of the libertarian movement. And funny enough, there is some sort of third party unity on this issue. So you'll have the Green Party, the Libertarian Party, in some sense coming together and saying, hey, we really want, you know, ranked choice voting because that helps both of us.
Right, right. Well, this is what I'll say about this. Ranked choice voting, to me, stole the congressional race from Sarah Palin, who was leading, and they didn't even figure out who won for a while, you know, and then they really couldn't give you a lot of details about it. So that's what I use as proof. The other issue I have with it is, again, I have to actually vote, because you're voting for this guy. I may not put Newsom in my scenario. Newsom may be number three, but eventually that becomes a vote for Newsom as the process goes along if one and two don't go the way I like, and I don't want anything to do with it. And finally, anything that is pushed by George Soros, I don't trust nor support. You know, it's that matter. But I understand why libertarians want it. You know, maybe if there's a way in the future to make something work that is principled and fair and can't be hidden or played with, I would go for it. But until then, I will always denounce ranked choice voting. But it brings to a point, maybe I should get the ranked choice voting guy I know that's a conservative, and we can have that debate night we talked about, you know, having, you know, getting a couple different sides. Okay, so moving on, though. I think it'd be a great idea, but moving on. Financially, it's no big secret libertarians always struggle. But there are questions about his campaign funding sources. My take to you is, I believe they welcome Lars Matzak because he's become a true libertarian. He's doing what he's not involved directly with party leadership in any position, but he's supporting his libertarian candidate. And Lars Matzak, to the audience out there, stole his website for about $500 million, is my understanding. So he may have had a partner or two, but he's well off. I think, how do you see Chase Oliver? Because let's be honest, y'all got stuck with Bill Weld because he's not a libertarian. And to me, this is another weapon I use against Big John. See, you libertarians are no different than any other party. You threw away your principles for money. Not because y'all don't have principles. That's just how party politics works. Because every libertarian wants to believe they're pure and true. But I can point the case after case after case. That's not true, because philosophically, libertarianism is one thing, but politically, it's an ideology. And I don't see the party having transitioned properly, as we see with the Mises Caucus leadership not supporting Chase. But my point is I don't think they have money issues compared to in the past having Lars Matzak. Or am I overreaching, thinking Lars is going to donate more money than I think he will? What's your stand on the Chase Oliver campaign and Lars Matzak and the finances to be able to properly run a campaign over the next 5 months?
Yeah, so if you're a conservative and you want Trump to win, one of the best ways that you can spend your money to defeat Biden is to support the Chase Oliver campaign. Because for every one Trump vote that Chase might take in a swing state, he's taking two Biden votes. So that could potentially be another source of fundraising. So we'll see how that plays out.
And to the audience out there, that is commonly done. I don't agree with it. In fact, we have a local race here at the state legislature with our biggest activist. His name is Carl DeMaio. He was facing the endorsed Republican candidate called Andrew Hayes. Tyler probably knows these names very well. He's in San Diego. And Carl DeMaio spent tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars to prop up the Democrat to get him to come in second, to knock out Andrew Hayes and make the general election a Democrat and a Republican. And for the audience out there who aren't in California, the top two winners, regardless of party advance. So that has been done. The final question on that point, though, Tyler, is Chase a threat enough to get people to want to do that?
Well, if, you know, the margins are so slim in these swing states, then I think people are going to be going through any avenue they think is worth their time.
There you go. And I agree with that. I never donate money to political campaigns anymore because they go to the consultants. I usually volunteer to walk, make phone calls, however they can use me. So that said, let's go on to immigration. Immigration was something that Tyler pointed out to me that off camera that I didn't address as much. And I thought I did. But so immigration is a critical social issue, and Oliver's views specifically regarding Trump's immigration policies are a point of contention. Oliver supports decriminalizing immigration, ending Title 42, and Trump could actually use that to paint him as weak. He supports an Ellis Island form of immigration, which is a simplistic immigration, and Tyler and I talked about this on camera. We weren't quite sure, but we've kind of rationalized it away to being, hey, you came to Ellis Island, you were processed, you were said yay or nay, and then you just went on your way. And that seems to be what Chase is supporting. What are your thoughts on his libertarian stance in terms of immigration? It sounds like he's an open borders guy. How does that fare with the battle within the Libertarian Party of the pro-closed borders and the pro-open borders? And then finally, how does that square with against Trump?
Well, first of all, I'll present a bit of the Chase Oliver case. So one could make the argument that the libertarian position really is about the free flow of, let's say, capital, goods, and labor. So labor, right, the free flow of labor, we're talking about, you know, open immigration. Specifically, what Chase Oliver has referred to as his preferred method of immigration is the Ellis Island approach, where you have a certain number of designated points of entry around the country. People come in legally through these areas. Potentially they are screened for, you know, doing criminal background checks and such, and then they're let in. I will read the official response from the Chase Oliver campaign. So, quote, "We should make it easy to immigrate legally." Let's see. That was his thing. And then the rest of that was about a bunch of BLM stuff. Let's see. I'll look on the website as well. Give me a moment here. We can kind of explain this a little more.
So, okay. Okay, you found it? Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I got it. All right. So Chase wants to collaborate with Congress to return to an Ellis Island style of processing immigrants. It should be simple for those who wish to come here to work and build a better life to appear before immigration officials at an accredited point of entry, be given medical and criminal checks to assess their safety, and receive a visa allowing them to immediately find employment. This is a process that should take, at most, days, not months or years. That's directly from the VoteChaseOliver.com website.
So
now I'll give a bit of the San Diego. Go ahead, William.
Translate that in simple terms. People don't always follow as you read. So what is he saying?
Well, he's essentially advocating for a very open immigration system.
Yeah, exactly, yes. Exactly. Yes. Okay, so what's the San Diego view then?
Okay, so the San Diego view would be, first of all, we need to really shut down this whole, the current wave of illegal immigration that we have. Just the scale of the illegal immigration across our southern border is untenable. You can't have, you know, 5% of the country coming in every year. It's going to have complete impacts on housing and other things. It's just not good. In addition, none of these people have any sort of vetting. You know, even in Chase Oliver's approach, he says we're going to have, even in his vision, there's some sort of criminal background checks. None of that's happening in the current situation. They're just streaming across. I saw some Twitter post about how it's harder to get into Disneyland than it is to get into the United States. And in fact, I was at Disneyland a while ago with my wife, and I thought that very same thing. I'm going through all these metal detectors and the security checkpoints, and I'm like, we have this to go see Mickey Mouse, but you want to come to the one of the greatest countries on earth? You can be from anywhere, have done anything. Who knows? You could be a drug kingpin. I don't know. You just walk across, and apparently that's fine with Biden, I guess.
It is, now, and it's wrong.
Yeah. So now that's not to say that we're anti-immigration. I think the general consensus of people in San Diego is that we should have a good, you know, streamlined immigration process. If you, for example, I talked about this on the last episode, the process for someone who wants to come here on an H-1B and work at Facebook or Google, it's extremely complicated. We are turning away the world's talent and the world's brightest people because our immigration process is so convoluted and so bureaucratic. Then in the San Diego Libertarian Party's opinion, that needs to be simplified. We need to make it easy for the best minds of the world and people who want to, you know, contribute and make our society better to come here in a rational, reasonable way. Does that answer the question?
Yes, it does. And I think in a perfect world, that's the answer I want. However, we're about 40 million. Look,
yeah.
I'm not a fan of Ann Coulter, but if you read her books, you will lose every argument. She is like Larry Elder. You can't win an argument because they live and breathe data. And she calculated, because they've been using the numbers from 1980s, 10 million illegals, 10 millions. Look, from 1980 to 2016, it was not just 10 million still. So she calculated it to about 30 million. Biden's allowed another 10 million. We're looking at 40 million. My take in a perfect world is what you said. However, I'm like, you got to stop immigration. They've done that in the past because they have specifically said the government, these immigrants need to assimilate and become Americans. For those of you who want to attack me because I just said that, go bleep yourself. And here's why. You can see on social media, all these immigrants or asylum seekers, you see them on campuses. Death to America. Death to America. Death to America. You can't import people who hate your freaking country. Your country will eventually die because of that. So I think we have to shut it down, get rid of the bad people, and assimilate the rest. I am on the side of dreamers who were born and raised here. There's a lot of dreamers who don't even speak the language they're supposed to be able to speak because people call them illegals, you know? So we have to have compassion. But the problem with American compassion from politicians is no compassion. They do what they see as a future vote. And that's how they determine issues. So that's how I look at it. But I'm in complete agreement with you. However, I will say this about all these visas, enough. The reason we have to import these people is because our public schools no longer teach. The numbers of kids entering science and mathematics is exponentially low compared to was in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. It's a shell of itself. And that's why we're forced to import a lot of Indian workers, a lot of workers who are computer savvy, who understand this. And that's wrong. And that's a failure in the school, and that's a failure in the Democrat Party, because the schools, public schools, are owned by teachers' unions, as you know, if the Libertarian Party supported Amy Reichart for Board of Supervisors. So that's where I stand on all that. But I agree with your take. We have to make it easier. We have to have a situation in which it is fair to all. All right, let me grab my notes here. Great answer, great take on that. Okay. I also want to bring this up because I first heard it from a libertarian, and I think it's a cop-out. It's true, but it's an easy cop-out for a libertarian who agrees with open borders. I want open borders once we get rid of what, Tyler?
The welfare state.
Exactly, because that's so true. A lot of conservatives would jump on board, not with the open borders, but yeah, Let's make legal immigration much easier once we shut down the welfare state. Because as a proud Latino, I find it disgusting to see my brethren Latinos come over the border with no ambition to live the American dream, but just wanting to freeload off the welfare system and send money back to their families. No, no, no. That's not being Latino. That's not being human. That's being a lazy human being that helps destroy the country you're leeching off of. So close. And I'm not saying that as a knock, Latinos. I'm a Latino of anybody who wants to come and take the fruits of our labors, we the taxpayers, and not contribute or pay into it. And I guess with that point on immigration, I'll leave it with this. Immigration is something that should be a simple process, but that we've complicated because we've allowed so many. And it's complicated now because how do you tell a human being who spent their last 10, 12, 15, 20, 30, 40 years here as an illegal, it's time to go back to your country? It's heartbreaking. It's easy to hate on somebody behind your computer on social media, but when you meet that person, you're meeting a fellow human being. And that's the dilemma I face as a human. It's easy for me to say, and this and that, but when I meet these people, and I've met with them, I've talked to them. My circle of friends up here in Valley Center, California, consists of a Chaldean, an illegal Mexican, of a white girl, and another Mexican who I rarely see now because he keeps moving up the chain. I've known these guys for 20 years. They're not friends, but they're who I see every day because our lives interact at this certain point almost every single day. So I have seen that. And when my friend, he's a friend, told me he was illegal. You want to know my reaction? You know, what do I say to him? Because these are my core beliefs. But here's a natural human being standing in front of me who I love and enjoy dearly. So it creates conflict. So it is a complicated process. And never forget that, especially you morons hiding behind your computers who just view it in black and white because it's not. So
I think we can, like you said, we can never forget that these people are individual human beings and they all have a story and a life and potentially a family. I think there is potentially evil in any system that forgets about the dignity of the individual. If you were to take away a lesson from George Orwell or much dystopian fiction, it's that evil often arises when the importance of the individual is lost to the will of the collective.
I was about to say the collective. It has to do with the collective. Of course, I agree. So real quick, moving on, let's talk abortion. I am a pro-life individual, but I do not believe it's my right to tell a woman what to do with her body. God will judge us. And if it's not God, something will judge us because we are beings of energy and energy does not die. That's my belief. So I was born and raised from a fundamentalist family. I understand what it is to be seen as. My mother briefly thought I may be gay because I had an earring growing up. You know, I got Americanized, had the earring. That's how fundamentalists think. It's a pure play into God. So I don't always agree with it. I am pro-life, but I do have caveats. Chase Oliver believes in decriminalizing abortion and sealing criminal records of users, and that may be seen as too liberal for some libertarians. What are your thoughts on it? And I've already given my thoughts, so we have a lot more to cover. So what are your thoughts on that, unless you think it's a discussion point?
So I think Chase has actually done, in terms of political strategy, Chase has done a good job. He's kind of played to both sides a little bit. He said he wants to decriminalize abortion, but he's also saying he does not want federal dollars going to Planned Parenthood. So he's kind of getting both sides of the coin there.
That's very good.
Yeah.
I mean, that's my issue is with Republicans, you sorry bastards. Every time Planned Parenthood gets funded, you tell us, well, I couldn't help it. It was a big omnibus bill. Yes, you could. Your party could have chosen not to participate in that vote and blocked it. But they don't. They're just in bed with them all. That's a great point. That's a very, very good point. My issue is it's our job to convince that woman. It's not government's job to create a law. You know, now I do believe in the science and creating laws through the science because that's what Democrats push. But all of a sudden, they're not believers in science when it comes to abortion. You know, only the pseudoscience when it came to COVID. All right. So actually, you're absolutely correct. Chase has positioned himself well with that. So now let's get back to what I think is, I'm just looking over my notes to see if there's anything else we may have missed regarding Chase and some of his. We haven't talked about a lot of things because he aligns properly. The economic policy, I believe, no tariffs, yeah. Things like that, aligns properly. We've talked about his strategy. Real quick, what's his take, or what do you think his take should be, and how does it align with libertarians on foreign policy? Look, there's global conflicts, a lot of tension out there. He does have a stance on military intervention, international trade agreements, and diplomatic relations with other countries. My assumption is, because I've never heard a conservative or a libertarian for the Mises Caucus make an issue of it, that he's pretty much aligned with the party on that. What's your take?
Yeah, he is quite aligned on that. In fact, when Michael Rechtenwald lost, he sent out a congratulations to Chase, and he said, "Chase, I am still happy to work with you on the anti-war front." So there's no issue there in terms of libertarian factional fighting. I think they're agreed upon with that. Just to, you know, kind of state what that position is, this is, again, looking on the vote, ChaseOliver.com. Headline says, "End wars and support peace. Close all overseas bases and immediately return active duty personnel to domestic bases. And aid being directed to nation states currently at war." So he is quite anti-war, and that's where you have the Mises and a lot of the classical liberals will align with that.
Well, this is where I differentiate as conservative. This is where he'll struggle to gain any conservative and maybe lose some of the Mises. No, he won't lose any of the Libertarian Mises Caucus, because I believe they probably align with what he's saying. The problem with any libertarian to me, when they say pull everybody back from these nations, this, that, some nations ask us. In Panama, the Army Corps of Engineers modernized Panama, period, end of story. Not for the Army Corps of Engineers, Panamanians would still be living in squalor. They created an infrastructure, showed them how to take care of the rivers. Aircraft carrier, depending where the world catastrophe is, whether it's a Fushima, I can't remember, or the Indonesian. There seems to be something in Indonesia every 5 years with a volcanic. We're there. We're there. I volunteered. I went 200 miles inland having to deal with the Shining Path, a terrorist group, to give help. So I completely disagree. Plus, if you become an isolationist, which is what libertarians in essence are stating by de facto by pulling our military back, bad guys will end up ruling the world. Hell, the Chinese entered the South China Sea and took it over. If there was no American presence there, they would literally overrun that, and we'd be at their whim. So I can completely disagree with his take, but I think with libertarianism, they will align. And the reason I brought my point up is I forget where this is a conservative show we're on. We've been talking so much libertarian. All right. So
you know, I really wish they could have sent some of those resources to Hawaii. You know, that would have been nice. What about Maui?
Well, actually, they did. I can guarantee you the military base was on alert. They had tiger teams on. See, you're looking at the fire and what's happening. All those people, the military offers bases, housing to bring them in, food. Y'all don't see that because the mainstream media is not going to show that. Why would they show something that goes against what they want their narrative to be? So that does happen. I can guarantee you that happened. The military bases were more than likely open to have the people who lost their homes to feed them. That's always a given. I've been part of that process as well. I have done a lot of volunteerism, and if I'm the politician, I'm stating, and by God, you know, it was great to volunteer. Reality, Del Pilar, we're volunteering you to go here. That's how it works in the military. But every volunteer job I was assigned for, whether I wanted to or not, I was proud of, which included being a teacher's aide as a linguistic translator. So the military does more than any libertarian even wants to consider, because that's why I'm like, I'll debate anybody when it comes to military and any libertarian, because I know how the military operates. I know what they've done. Are they vile and evil? Yes, they have been abused at times. My own country, Panama, was formed because Teddy Roosevelt sent the Great White Fleet. It was a fleet that was painted all white that was being that was going around the world to show American power. And when Colombia said no to the United States to allow Panamanians to have their freedom away from Colombia, because Panama was part of Colombia. Teddy sent the Great White Fleet because we couldn't do the canal in Nicaragua because it was too volcanic. They had chosen Panama. These people want their freedom. We are backing them. So instead of offering you 10 or 11 billion like they did, we're not going to give you squat, but we're going to show you our fleet. Give them their freedom. So it has been abused, but that's human nature. That's just, I mean, again, I'm not saying this to denigrate a libertarian, but I libertarians are no saints. I can bring up the Ron Paul newsletter. He's one of their icons, you know. So we all have our demons and everything. And I think it's very short-sighted for libertarians to have their belief on cops because they assume all the state is bad. But when there's a mugging taking place, the stop, question, and frisk was beloved by black members of the communities it was implemented in because it got criminals and guns off the streets. But the libertarians were, no, that's bad. A libertarian living in his suburb, I don't care what you think when it comes to the black member in his criminalized ghetto or Latino in the barrio, and cops come in and help out. So what I'm saying is it's not a black and white issue. And I think one of the ways libertarianism fails to grow is by making that a black and white issue. And again, I'm not saying I'm right. I believe I'm right, but libertarians believe they're right on that. Hey, Tyler, I took a few minutes there. What's your response to that? Disagree or however you want to view it. No judgment.
Well, first off, I want to acknowledge, you know, the work that you did when you were in the service. For any veteran who has, you know, gone to places and helped, you know, people in need, you know, with immunizations, dental work, whatever it might be, you know, those individual people who made those contributions, you know, I would have the utmost respect for them and appreciation for them. My grandfather was in the service and I have the utmost respect for veterans. So I don't want to denigrate any of those people's individual stories. My commentary is about the overall effect of the choices of those in power and what they've done with the military-industrial complex.
I'm in agreement. I'm in bed with you there, brother. We are two peas in a pod. I am actually, based on what I just said, people may not realize, I am anti-war. I'm like, why the hell are we sending people to – I mean, I understand. One of my missions was I was part of a deployment of one ship, a 1940s communications array, and our job was to gather intel off the FARC, from the FARC terrorist group off the coast of Nicaragua. And our ship, excuse my language here, but this is how you said in the military, our ship broke dick and we were floating into enemy waters. And you could look, you could go topside and you could see their gunboats and there's this pointing there.
Oh, you can see the FARC gunboats.
Well, no, we saw the Nicaraguan government's gunboat. We weren't, you're not supposed to be in those waters. They reacted as any nation would have. So I understand missions like that. That's just what libertarians say, that's just part of life in terms of how politics are done. But what I don't agree with is Herbert Bush, George Bush, Obama, or any of these people sanctioning, and I don't even know if the term police action is still the legal term, but when I grew up and was taught in school, police actions were the president could command or dictate a police action, which is sending troops. Vietnam was considered a police action. Technically speaking, even if they changed the term, Iraq's.
They're doing all this without a declaration of war from Congress.
Exactly. Yeah. So I have become an anti-war monger because all that has been Ukraine. You know, we may not be sending troops, but we're sending billions and billions that's turning into trillions of U.S. debt that we have to pay to Ukraine. So I am very anti-war, but I do believe what Ronald Reagan said, and it is true. When you are prepared, you will. There's a saying, chance favors the prepared mind. So when you as a military are prepared, and that means having weapons on hand, having the ready military on hand, you are prepared for any scenario that bad actors may prop up. And that's what I believe a strong military is for. So I think you and I are probably more aligned than what most libertarians would believe, because I am most definitely anti-war. Does that mean I don't disagree. Hey, something happens. You got to drop a big old megaton bomb like Trump did. Hey, I'm for that. but I'm not for sending troops. I'm not for us having people in there playing tactics to get one side to fight another side, and then our military industrial complex benefits by sending weapons to both sides. I'm not for that at all. So yeah, I am very anti-war. And to my conservatives, go bleep yourself if you are war, because odds are you're the conservative that doesn't have the kids serving. Living in a well.
And if you live in Florida, you can wave hi to the Russian submarines right now. Yeah. The Russian nuclear subs.
Well, I've got news.
Which may or may not be carrying nuclear missiles right off the coast of Florida. So that's the mess we're in right now.
They've always been there. I got news for people out there. They've always been there. It's just now they're showing
them. Well, there's more of them now.
Yes, yes. All right. We've been here a while. I do want to revisit because – to me, this is the most important part of Chase Oliver, and that is, again, his social issues, specifically the drag queen story hour. He says there's no issues with that. It's okay for kids to be read to in terms of transgender men. My issue isn't the fact it's transgender men they're being read to, it's how they're dressed. What they're showing. They're talking about masturbation is good, sexual intercourse between men and men and boys and whatever is okay. I had to think of the word. Fellatio is okay. And I say that because books they are allowing and they are pushing is really a big part of that. I think that's a non-starter. I think that's one reason he will not win 1%. And I put up a picture. I mean, to me, that's technically not that bad. This is like a costume. If I'm a teacher, okay, costume dressed up. But it's the books they're promoting, to me, are not healthy for a child at that age. If you're 18, I'm fine with it. But a child, I'm like, no, that's sexuality. That's what's the word? That's degenerate. That's very degenerate. It should not be shown to kids at that age. What are your thoughts on it?
I think Chase dances around this point a little bit. I don't know if there should necessarily be some sort of government action saying, like, you can't have, like, drag queen story hour or whatever. Does the government need to be involved? No, I don't think. But, like, if you're a parent and you're sending your kids to, you know, things where some guy is walking around in a Speedo or whatever, is that responsible? In the same vein, would you be a responsible parent if you're taking your kids to Hooters? No, I don't think so. And why are kids being shown sexually inappropriate books? I mean, I think that just would go to the whole argument for school choice. And the Libertarian Party has been a huge supporter of school choice. In fact, it was the Republicans that jumped on with us about this. Cory DeAngelis, school choice. So if you are, you know, have aversion to your kids being shown these materials, there's nothing you would want more than school choice.
I agree. And the Democrats and rhinos who are funded by Teachers Union. That's one thing Cory DeAngelis and for the record, I have never seen one thing from Cory. I follow him. He's retweeted, reposted me. We're not friends at all. I just feel lucky that we agree so much. He's reposted a lot of the stuff. I think I'm too mean for some of my posts. He's like, oh, God, I can't retweet that. But I've never, ever seen him talk about the Libertarian Party. I think that's one of those libertarian beliefs that he is championing, and I think it shows how libertarians can be effective without the party, because that's one of those – in fact, I don't even call it a libertarian belief. I call it a common sense belief, because conservatives have believed in that for decades and decades. And I will give Cory credit because you are correct. But the San Diego constituency made this a nationwide issue too. We were nationwide in front of the news. Amy Reichart was part of that. She became nationally known a bit. So it's one of those things where I think conservatism and libertarianism align. So I am in complete agreement with you. I think it's the sexuality that they're promoting that destroys Chase's point, what he states of it being okay. The final topic is the one that really bugs me the most. Let me, and that's the pride parades. because the pride parades are being advertised, bring out your kids. And he supports this also. And again, I'm not showing these pictures to denigrate Chase at all, but this is who Chase is and who he supports, in my opinion. And I already showed this one picture, but let me show it again here. Regarding this one, is to me, this epitomizes who Chase is. And not in a good or bad way, but his belief system, who and what he supports. And in full transparency, my brother-in-law was gay. You know, he talked about, showed me pictures of the Greenwich Halloween nights. And I just laughed and all that because I was like, that's your community. Be proud of it. I have issues when you try to push that community onto children. So that's one of the images that has been really circulating. That doesn't bother me. You know, the reason conservatives and libertarians on the media side are showing that is because it makes them look feminine. And that's not fair to Chase, but it's politics. I'm an Alinskyite believer, meaning I use the righteous truth. I will attack your ass in politics because you're attacking me that way. But that's how they want to perceive it. That's not my issue with Chase. This is my issue with Chase. See that little girl right there? And then you see that. That's my issue. I don't agree with Chase saying pride parades are okay to bring children to, because that's one of the more, I don't know, what's the term, Tyler, more nicer, more, it's one of the lesser vile things I've seen. I've seen people twerking right in front of the kids. I've seen them with their nether regions, literally, not touching, but as close as you can. I just see stuff like that. And so I think that's a death knell for Chase. I don't think he can overcome that. I'm not bringing this up to hurt Chase. In fact, my partner, Big John, supports Chase in his campaign. I'm bringing it to, this is a non-starter with the Mises Caucus and conservatives. What's your take? And while you're doing your takes, I want to show some of the images that I take offense to. And my take was Chase should have taken all this stuff down because it was such a loser. And then kind of reformulated his tactics and how he wanted to present this pride issue. The floor is yours, sir.
Yeah, I think Chase has a long way to go to make amends on this issue. I think it could be framed simply as that it's not appropriate for children, just as it's not appropriate for children to go on Bourbon Street, at midnight on a Friday. It's not appropriate for them to have some man's groin right in their face twerking. I don't think you have to make it an LGBTQ issue. It's simply this is not age appropriate for children necessarily. I mean, if everyone was just fully clothed and they were waving flags, maybe it'd be fine. But oftentimes it's very graphic. And I don't think that's appropriate for a 10-year-old. That's not appropriate for a 10-year-old.
And the thing about the pride parades, and again, my brother-in-law, rest in peace, God bless that man, but he was an idiot as a young man and with the whole Fire Island. And if you're my age, you understand what I'm talking about. He was a good human being, but he was flamboyant, or he wasn't, but some of his friends were. And what I'm trying to say is flamboyancy, it's usually a really focused on the nether regions, on their sexuality, that flamboyancy. And that's what this image here is what I'm talking about. I have friends who are gay. I would tell them, I don't agree with this. You know, be gay, be happy. Don't put it in front of children. You know, this is the one I was talking about. And Tyler, I apologize. I'm not trying to put you in a spot, but I feel I want to show these to state the case of what I'm trying to make here, that he needs to change his stance. And to me, this is one of the images that I'm talking about that you cannot have regarding children. You know, another one is, and this is probably my last one. And part of it's my ego. I researched a long time to find these images. I didn't research a lot of time, but you get my point. This is another one, you know, it's, they don't show the guy, but you can see he's got a thong on and you see the little girl and little boy right next to them. To me, that's just not appropriate, you know, and the final one I'll show was this bike race. Present share screen again, my friends, I'm new at this. Was the new bikers, you know, you know, they're on this parade and there's kids, you know, highlighted on the sides. So my whole take isn't to make Tyler look bad because he's part of the Libertarian Party and chases his nominee. This is part of the issue the libertarians in his party are having with him. And I wanted to bring this up because this is a conservative podcast, and to the audience, when push comes to shove, it chases social issues where I don't support him, I don't condone it, and I would do everything for libertarian voters to vote for Trump because of those social issues. If you're 18, and you know, Big John, the libertarian on our show, told me, he goes, William, the human brain does not stop developing until you're between 24 and 28 or something like that. He's like, so even at 18, you don't have a fully developed human brain. So my take is you're 18, do what you want. But keep this off of the streets, kids. You may have said it, and I apologize, but I'm not even going to ask you how, but can Chase overcome this? And if he can, how? You may have already addressed it, but I want to make this the point here before we close this out.
Well, I think the LGBT thing is very close to one of his core planks as a candidate. I mean, this is one of his major things, is that, you know, he's a big presence in the Atlanta Pride Parade. It's a very core thing to him. For him to do a 180 on that is just, it wouldn't be true to who he is. And I don't think he can convince anyone of that. Now, what can he do? Maybe, you know, he can try to acknowledge that and make some sort of statement saying, look, if you aren't comfortable, you know, with your kids being at these events, you know, don't bring them. You know, if you think this is inappropriate, you know, don't do it. You know, he's probably stated that in more or less words, right? There's no one forcing you to bring your kids to this event. But I think he, from a political perspective, he needs to emphasize that message that if you're a right libertarian or a left libertarian, you know, the choices that you make for your children are yours to make. And you can choose what you think is appropriate for them.
You know, I used to agree to that until I saw all this happening. And I'm like, I think, and even Spike Cohen was talking about this earlier today. If the state has any job, it should be to protect our children. You know, the problem is the state can't do anything without becoming monstrosities. Now they're just taking
which I said
from parents.
Before the podcast, I said perhaps it is the role of the state to make child abuse illegal and stop child abuse. The definition of child abuse perhaps is up for debate. Now, if it's legal to bring your kid to a Hooters, maybe it should also be legal to bring your kid to a Pride Parade. I don't necessarily see a big difference between these two things.
Technically, it's illegal in most states because you cannot have somebody under 21 in an establishment.
Well, there's the drinking thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I'm not denigrating your example because your example is on point. But what I'm saying is it's one of the laws throughout our nation kind of overrides the ability of somebody to bring somebody to a Hooters. And to be quite honest, in the male world, you know, you bring your kid to one of those places to have a beer or cigar once they become a man in your eyes. The problem is we got morons who think their 12-year-old kid's a man, you know? And, like, and maybe 100 years ago, he was, but not in today's era. Finally, the final question, sir, and thank you for coming on. It's my final question, but I want you to promote where we can find you and your social media again. But gun to your head. You can't even say that anymore politically. It's too politically correct. But I don't say it. Put a gun to your head. What percentage of the vote do you think Chase reaches 1%? And if so, how much higher than 1%?
In blue states, yes.
Well, overall.
I think maybe he goes higher. Overall, maybe he averages out slightly less than 1%.
I'm thinking he could have the lowest outing in since the party. I don't know what the party's early. So let's say since the turn of the century, I think you could probably have the lowest outing percentage. And I'm not saying that because I disagree. I just think this whole social issues, because disagree with me if you want, but it seems to me we're seeing a turning of the tide here. We're seeing America shifting back to, no, we don't agree with this. No, we don't agree with that. No, we don't agree with this, with that. Stuff that was successful from 2008 until about last year. So that's why I think that shifting tide is what's going to doom him and get him to less than 1%. Am I overanalyzing it?
I think there's a big tide that's turning, especially on certain issues like the trans stuff. Now I do want to say as a final thing, you know, regardless of what the Chase Oliver campaign does, so we're still out here in San Diego. We're representing honesty, integrity, and good governance. So if you want to get involved with local libertarians and stand for principle, we're here. I'm the chair of the San Diego Libertarian Party, Tyler Collins, and you can join us at sdlp.org. For example, we're, you know, sponsoring candidates in city council races. We have Jeff Fox in Vista running for city council. And he's going to be, you know, I think good for small business, you know, community minded. I think Jeff is going to be a great person to contribute to Vista. And we're always looking for new members and any candidates looking for sponsorships. If you think you have a libertarian message and you're in a nonpartisan race, please reach out.
There you go. And let me tell you libertarians in San Diego something. The county party is inept. And I actually loved Tony Kovarik before he left. Never knew Paula Witzel, briefly met her. I'm talking about the party chairs. But the Republican Party does not go into blue districts. And they don't put any resources into anything but congressional races right now. So my advice to the Libertarian Party and Libertarian members will be focus on just one or two races. That's it. Not that you don't want to focus on others, but you don't have the money or the manpower. But if you focus, I would say focus on one race. You could flip that race. You could flip that table. One win at a time. And I say this trepidatiously because I do have thoughts of running for a higher office, and I guarantee you there's going to be a Republican who will use what I just said. See, he's a libertarian. He's not a Republican. That's how our politics are. The reason I'm not a well-liked person in the Republican Party, because I have told him, go, and I won't say it here, but go F off. These are my beliefs. You know, some Republicans, Tyler, wanted me to leave the district to go into a more viable district where they could groom me. You know, groom me. Because I'm Latino, speak, read, and write Spanish, and I check off the boxes. Disgusting. They want to determine who will represent your community. They don't want the community to determine who they want to represent them. So if you libertarians can focus in on one, I do believe it could be a game changer in your world. It may not be a game changer anywhere, but it's a small office, but it could be a game changer in your local party. And I said that was a final point, but as you were talking, where does the San Diego Libertarian Party stand on Chase Oliver? Will they help to make sure he gets ballot access in the state of California? Because I do know, or I assume it's a Mises-led caucus at the state level. So where is the state libertarians of California stand on publicly supporting Chase Oliver, and will they work to make sure he has ballot access if that's still an issue?
So indeed, the state party is controlled by the Mises Caucus. The current chair is Adrian Malagon. In terms of them getting him ballot access, you know, I would think that they're going to be going through with anything towards ensuring that Chase has ballot access and supporting him in that fashion. And again, you know, let's take the case that Mises wants Trump to win. Supporting Chase in a blue state helps Trump. So, you know, even if they don't like Chase, they're probably still going to support him here.
Yeah, that's a very good point, because you could probably convert more blue voters who are literally despising the Democrats, but who can't bring themselves to vote for it. Like I said, you focus on that one race.
I think especially on the anti-war front, you have, you know, some of these, like, you know, Free Palestine people, they have a screw loose, but they're pretty pissed at Joe Biden, and so maybe Chase can get some of them.
No, that's a good point. That's a good point. And to interpret for you a little bit, Tyler did that brilliantly. Whether he supports Chase or not doesn't matter. He said the right thing to make sure he stays in good standing, which is what a good leader should do in a situation like this. Because my belief is simple. As a party, you support your nominated candidate. If not, get the bleep out of the party. If it's philosophy, hey, I get you. Libertarianism and individualism go hand in hand. But when you're a party leader or part of the party construct, you have a fiduciary. Is that, did I say fiduciary? And a moral obligation to support your candidate. Tyler, before I let you go back to the family, please tell us, you've already told us at SDL, in fact, let me put that up back up, but just repeat once more, your website is
www.stlp.org. That's our website where you can donate and join.
And where can they find you on Twitter? Or X,
they can find us at SD Libertarian.
Tyler, thank you for coming on. We spent almost 2 hours here. I thought we could do it in an hour, but we got into the fun stuff, the convention. This will not be your last time. In fact, to the audience, Tyler and I are talking off camera or briefly, but hopefully into deeper talks. Libertarians are notoriously known for having debates amongst each other. I'd love to bring some conservatives and libertarians because what it does is it sharpens both sides. You become a better debater. You become a better a champion for your causes. So when a conservative loses debate badly, I'm like, well, learn from it. You know, and I'm sure Tyler says the same thing. And for the rest of us, do not forget, you can catch this podcast at grumblingsmedia.com as well as traditional podcast outlets like Pandora, Spotify, Apple, Google, as well as seeing the podcast on Rumble and YouTube. And our profile handles is Grumblings Media on those outlets. We also have Points on the Board, which is my podcast, where it's pure play politics and intersectionality of sports. I've got a great Caitlin Clark podcast coming up. We also have fellow libertarian Big John, my partner, who just interviewed Spike Cohen on Free for All. Tyler has been a guest on Free for All as well. So Spike Cohen spoke about his nonprofit, about non-libertarian events he's been doing, like trying to help families get their children back where the state has literally kidnapped them, as well as his stance on the Libertarian Convention, the Mises Caucus, and just for a little foreshadowing, Spike is not happy with the he didn't outright say it, but it's obvious he's not happy with the leadership and their role with Chase versus the philosophy. We also have Pure Play Sports, the Buzzer Beaters basketball, as well as Blindside Blitz, which is our football. And to finalize this, you can find this written content, other podcasts at grumblingsmedia.com. Tyler, I keep wanting to call you Chase. Tyler, thank you for coming on board. And to the rest of you, thank you. My name is William Del Pilar, and this is Fired Up. Until next time, I bid you adieu.